Hello, I'm Ray Reich, founder and CEO of RevOps Squared, and your host of the Metrics That Measure Up podcast. We talk to a wide variety of B2B, SaaS, and cloud thought leaders, executives, investors, and people just like you to discuss the metrics and benchmarks they use to make metrics-informed decisions. Now on to today's show. Welcome to today's episode of the Metrics That Measure Up podcast. Today, we are joined by Nick Franklin, the founder and CEO of ChartMogul. Today, we'll be covering three main topic areas with Nick. First, the top SaaS metrics that really matter to early stage investors. Second, the top SaaS metrics that really matter to early stage founders and CEOs. And third, the value of creating a metrics-driven culture early in a SaaS company's journey. Nick, please take a moment to give a brief overview of your journey to becoming a guest on the Metrics That Measure Up podcast.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me, Ray. I really appreciate it. Yeah, my name is Nick, CEO of a company called ChartMogul. What led me here? I mean, I've been working in tech for, I don't know, perhaps about 15 years and 12 or 13 of those years in SaaS. So I was 5 years at Zendesk. Very early there, I ran their European business and then their Asia business. And really on the kind of sales and international expansion side, but also setting up support teams and these kind of things. And, you know, it was a great ride. Zendesk was, scaled rapidly. I got to learn a lot about kind of the business side of a SaaS business. But my heart was always definitely more in product. And I guess I always had that ambition to try and create a startup and see if I can do it myself. So, yeah, after 5 years at Zendesk, I decided to leave and start this company, ChartMogul, which does subscription analytics. So it's a SaaS product that you plug your subscription billing system into, be that, you know, it could be Stripe or Chargebee or Recurly, or it could even be a mobile app store like Apple App Store or Google Play. You plug those in and we sort of automate the process of calculating all your key subscription SaaS metrics and some other marketing and trial and things like that metrics. We automate that. And there's a whole bunch of tooling around that for data cleaning, data management, data export, things like that. But that's kind of the key of what it does. And so, yeah, I've been running this business for 8 years now. We just celebrated our 8 year anniversary a month ago. Yeah. So I guess that's the short version.
Well, you know, Nick, when I first saw your background as I was doing research on you as a guest here on the Metrics to Measure Up podcast, I'm like, wow, maybe we should talk about product-led growth because that experience at Zendesk had to be so amazing, but that'll be a different show. So today we're going to talk about your subscription analytics and specifically about SaaS metrics because that's what we focus on here on the show. So ChartMogul is a great platform for presenting performance metrics for SaaS companies. So let's start with why. Why are understanding those performance metrics so important in the early stages of SaaS company's evolution? I understand it when you're 20 million or 50 million ARR, but why is it so important in that early part of the journey, Nick?
I mean, I think it's just important at any stage of the business to kind of know how you're doing, right? To understand the dynamics of the business, especially in the early days, you're probably still figuring out a whole lot of stuff, right? You're probably figuring out pricing, for example, pricing and packaging and how that works. So you kind of want to understand, you know, we haven't changed our pricing in more than 3 years now, but in the first sort of 5 years of the company, we definitely had quite a few iterations of the pricing. So being able to track, you know, the data on what is the, you know, conversion rate on certain plans, what is the churn rate and retention rates on certain plans, which plans get more upsell within the plan, expansion revenue. And so the LTV of each pricing and plan is like super important to understand all those dynamics. So I'd say that's probably one big reason to have in the early stage to kind of figure out pricing and packaging. That's a big use case for our product. It often gets cited as like, yeah, helping do a lot of the sort of informing of the decision making during any sort of pricing change. And definitely in the early years of a SaaS company, there's a lot more pricing changes than there are in the later years when usually people have sort of figured it out. But then, you know, there's all sorts of other reasons, like you might want to raise money, right? Like you might want to pitch investors. So having accurate, up-to-date, comprehensive set of business metrics, very, very useful if you're going to pitch investors, or if you already got investors and you need to update them, you know, once a month or once a quarter or whatever that cadence is. It's ideal not to be spending a lot of time on that and, you know, have it sort of mostly automated. So, you know, there's a whole ton of good reasons why tracking this stuff early on makes sense. I think, you know, one thing that we've done from day one is have the whole company have access to our ChartMogul metrics dashboard. And I think that's been great. It kind of makes everybody in the company aware, you know, where we're at, how we're doing as a business. And it just gives them context, you know, around what's happening in the business. This sort of helps also the whole team kind of rally behind a metric, I suppose, as well. You know, for us, it's usually ARR or something like that.
That brings up an interesting point, Nick. I find so many early stage companies, and I shouldn't even say early stage, just same with 20 and 50 million ARR SaaS companies, they don't publish their metrics just so all their employees can see them, let alone aligning individual objectives that have causal impact on those metrics. Why do you think that is, Nick? Why do you think the majority of customers, we did some benchmarking research about a year ago, and 74% of SaaS companies do not share their company level performance metrics, things like gross dollar retention, net dollar retention, CAC payback period with employees. Why do you think that is?
So we have the same thing with our customers. It's sort of one of the metrics, engagement metrics that we track is number of users per account and a number of active users per account, maybe even more informative, like how many per single customer, you know, which is a business, how many of their employees are logging in every week. And we try to have that as high as we can. We want the whole company to be using the product. So, you know, sometimes we do, when our customer success team, they talk to a client and there's like one or two people with access to the account, and we can see that the company is quite large. Maybe they have a couple of hundred employees, right? So it's a decent sized SMB or mid-market company, depending on, you know, which country you're in, I suppose. You know, we ask them, why don't you invite more of your people? And they say, well, yeah, we don't, you know, we like to keep it close to the chest. And I think it's more a cultural thing. You know, I think it's just a kind of an attitude or a cultural thing, mostly around kind of keeping things kind of secret. You know, I think having sort of empowered employees, not being super top down, letting information kind of be more or less shared throughout the organization. That is, like, I suppose, sort of more, maybe more modern or more, you know, I don't know, progressive. Maybe that's the wrong word, but that's a loaded word. But
right.
You know, maybe that's a more modern way. And maybe if you're a more traditional business person, you know, you're just used to having some things be on a need to know basis. You know, so, but maybe there are legitimate reasons as well. Maybe it's more like, you know, they don't want to distract the team and things like that, right? But my general feeling is it's that it feels a little bit old-fashioned, and we try to encourage our customers to invite everybody, I suppose.
Yeah, it's interesting. I founded our company because I want to democratize access to benchmarks to make better metrics-informed, benchmark-validated decisions. Same thing with running a company, right? I want every employee to know whatever she or he does, how it impacts those company-level metrics we're presenting to the investors or the board. Yeah. But you said something earlier, Nick, and I want to double-click on that because I'm like, wow, you know better than anyone. When do you see what cohort of customers first adopt a ChartMogul? Is it pre-1 million? Is it at 5 million? Is it they're getting ready for a Series A or Series B? Is there a cohort of customers that you see are the largest adopters of a product like ChartMogul?
So we have something like 2,500 active accounts. And about half of those are free, and half of those are paid. And the free ones all have an MRR less than $10,000 a month. So 120, so tiny, right? Like sort of one salary, like one American technology, you know, $120,000 a year ARR. And below that, it's free, basically. So we want to be one of the first tools they do when they're getting, you know, they set up when they're getting started, right? They set up Slack. They set up, you know, Notion, maybe they set up Stripe for their billing and payments, and then they plug ChartMogul in for all their reporting. So we definitely capture a lot of people early, and I think at least half our paying customers come to us from sort of graduating out of this free plan. So they go above 10K MRR, and they get a paywall, like a New York Times style paywall that says congratulations, and, you know, invites them to upgrade to a paid version. But then, yeah, we do have customers that are much larger, that, you know, have over 100 million ARR and that are, you know, considerably bigger. Yeah, we have a sales team, and they, you know, sales engineering, account managers, account executives, and we do a more traditional selling cycle there. So we try to do the whole thing. We don't have any mega large corporations, you know, $1 billion ARR, anything like that, but it's kind of the 0 to 100 million that we play in. So it's, well, very small business, I guess, to SMB and low end of mid-market, I suppose, is kind of where we approximately play. And that ideally, they use it in a continuous, like an ongoing thing to make sure that metrics are always up to date and they can kind of have data-informed decision-making, democratize data throughout the organization. But we do see that occasionally we get companies that will just spin it up, use it for a fundraising round and then shut it down. Like occasionally you get a founder. Yeah, I had a founder message me a while ago and they were like, oh yeah, I've been using your product and I just absolutely nailed the pitch with, you know, I think it was like Redpoint. It's like a top tier Silicon Valley VCs and really grateful. But then they didn't actually, they just needed it for that thing. And then they kind of more of a temporal use case, which is fine too, although it's not kind of generally what we're going for with customers, I suppose. Yes.
Well, let's double click on that because you talked about I used it to, you know, pitch to a VC. So what are the top two or three metrics? Kind of take that 10,000 to 100,000 MRR cohort. What are the top two to three metrics that you see the investors wanting to know that founder CEO really has their hands on and understands?
I think it's a mixture of like the engagement side. Like they want to see like traction, engagement, stickiness, like that's really foundational. It's more leading, right, than revenue, which is a bit more trailing in terms of an indicator. I think retention, I guess investors, it's most about growth, right? They really care about growth because that's like, it's all about potential, future potential, especially if it's really early stage, right? So growth. And that could be, you know, growth of engagement, right? Like in the early days of, you know, growth of engagement is maybe more exciting in some ways than growth of revenue because small amounts of revenue. So it's growth of engagement and growth of revenue and growth of subscribers. And then I think retention and churn, like, okay, you're attracting people and customers, but are they sticking around? Are they buying, you know, upgrading? Is the gross churn good? Is the net churn good? You know, and the logo churn, right? And then, you know, obviously in addition to everything else, like do they like the team? Do they like the market, the opportunity, et cetera? So I think those things probably the most interesting to the investors looking at a SaaS company.
Let's double click on engagement because everybody, you know, I loved if you had revenue growth, of course, you know, the triple, triple, double, double, double rule, right? But engagement, are there two or three specific attributes of engagement that you think companies need to measure? Or is it really depend upon the type of product they have?
Yeah, it can be highly dependent, right? So I think each company has to pick their thing. There are some engagement metrics that are pretty universal to most SaaS businesses, right? Like how many users are there on the account? How many times a week or times a month or times a day are they logging into the product, right? Like if you think about a Slack, right? We got our entire company on there and the majority of them are using it every single day. So I think that's pretty gold standard. And, you know, you probably don't need that if you're not a chat app, but those kind of like, you know, monthly active, weekly active, are they logging in actually doing stuff? That's kind of pretty, you know, if it's an analytics or workflow app or something like that, there's probably something pretty similar that you could apply to most SaaS businesses. But then there's always something that's specific to the kind of business model or the product domain of that company that's more specific. Like for us, it might be how much, you know, revenue are we tracking across all of our customers and how many subscribe, you know, this kind of thing, like how much total revenue across the customer base are we tracking? And how's that growing? Things like this, you know, that could indicate success. So I think it depends. I think workflow is generally a bit more obvious, right? Like if you're talking about applicant tracking, it's like, you know, how many recruiters are using the product? How many applicants are applying? How many jobs are getting created? How many jobs are getting closed? You know, these kind of things. With Zendesk, it might be how many support tickets are flowing in, how many customer service agents are answering support requests every day and things like that. So I think these kind of metrics show that there's core value being delivered. And that's increasing, like the growth on that, the kind of core value to the market is getting delivered and that's growing is like probably in the early days, maybe even more interesting than revenue when, you know, the monetization will come much later, especially with a venture backed type of business, right?
It's interesting. I found everyone's talking about that North Star metric today. And often I find a North Star metric is more of an engagement metric than it is a pure revenue metric, right? A number of e-signatures at DocuSign, right? Yeah, that's going to translate to revenue, but it's really product engagement. Speaking of product engagement, you gave me the opportunity to ask a PLG type question, and that's the activation point or that aha moment when a user comes to the platform and is like, oh, I see the value. Is there an aha moment in the Chartmogul platform that you refer to?
Absolutely. Yeah, we do have some of those. I mean, it's sort of time to value and aha moment. For us, it's really when they create their free trial and they connect their billing system and they run that import. So they run that import with their Stripe account, something like that. And then they basically get the dashboard and the account populated with a whole bunch of reports and analytics. And a lot of the time, like one of the things I say to people that haven't yet signed up is like, if I'm doing some sort of pitching of the product, I don't do sales that often, but I'll say something like, I promise you'll learn something new about your business. I guarantee you'll learn something new about your business if you do this. And it's definitely always the case, because so a lot of what people pay for with our product is not just you can kind of create charts and you can create reports. It's also the kind of opinions that we kind of bake best practices. It's the curation, right? So we decide, okay, what's the best way to measure a subscription business? What do we think is the best way to measure a subscription business? You know, what metrics are important? How should you measure those metrics? What's the formulas you should use? And also, how should you visualize those metrics? Like, how should they be displayed in the way that's most useful and most informative? And so we bake all that into the product. So when people sign up, one of the feedback that we often get is like, oh yeah, it's so obvious that, you know, you should have an MRR movements chart, monthly recurring revenue movements chart, which is just a compound chart, I suppose, where you kind of get per month or per quarter, the new business, the expansion, the reactivation and the churn and the contraction, you sort of compound them into a sort of layered bar chart. And that chart just by itself is almost an aha moment. You see that and you can, just by looking at this single chart of MRR movements over time, you can really understand almost the entire SaaS business just by looking at that single chart. It's extremely informative. Like, it tells you so many things about it. It tells you about how is new business growing? How is expansion doing? How many people reactivate? Are there people churning out, that downgrades? What's the growth rate? You know, like, what's the retention rate? It tells you all that information can be captured in that single compound chart. So I guess that's getting that is a big aha moment for customers.
Yeah, we talk a lot about, you know, metrics need to be evaluated in context of five attributes. And one of those contexts is time. There's nothing like a time series chart, right?
Yeah.
The other thing we highly recommend is you can look at your internal trends, but also look at how you're trending against external benchmarks. Things like net dollar retention has changed, you know, fairly, not dramatically, but materially over the last 3 years. But let's pivot to the company now hits that 100K MRR. So I'm at about 1 million ARR, right? And I'm ready to go to 5 million. Do you see some new metrics being introduced that become more important for internal decision-making at that 1 to 5 that weren't quite as important when you were just attaining both product market fit and minimal repeatability from a customer acquisition perspective? New ones?
I guess from 1 to 5, it's maybe you get a bit more into optimization. So, you know, you probably want to understand more, you know, really understand the funnel mechanics. You also have a bigger customer, you have a real customer base at that point, right? You're at 4, 3, 4, 5 million. It's a real customer base. And so churn starts to become a big problem, right? For a lot of SaaS businesses. Unless you're really lucky, it usually starts to become an issue, right? And your ability to grow starts to depend on your ability to retain your customers. So probably the focus, you know, 0 to 1 is we were lucky. We didn't really have to focus on churn before we got to about 1 million. Like, we didn't have a whole lot of churn in our first year. We just grew through customer acquisition and a bit of some expansions and not a whole lot of churn. But once you start to scale up, you know, the impact you get, that the SaaS ceiling effect, and the you know, you get the ability to grow from the expansion or the inability to grow from the churn of your existing large customer base is actually a much more powerful force than your ability to grow from sales and adding new customers, right? Like, that's just the kind of laws of SaaS, of subscription physics or something. So I guess focusing a lot on retention and those dynamics, the dynamics of net gross and logo retention and the, you know, getting the funnel right. One thing I noticed as we got larger, maybe above 5 million, but definitely kind of on that journey from sort of 5 to 10, I noticed that what started happening to me sort of subconsciously was I stopped focusing so much on monthly metrics. Even though most of our customers do pay us monthly, I think only around 20-25% pay us annually. Most of them are paying us month to month. But I stopped looking so much at MRR and monthly growth rates and monthly, that I started thinking more in terms of annual ARR, even, you know, annualized run rate, annualized growth rates. You know, what is the net dollar retention over a year. You start, I think it's just the length, the lifespan of the company's bigger, and you start thinking in longer sort of, you start thinking in terms of years and not months and quarters a little bit. So I just noticed that happening to me is like wanting to just see more things presented in a sort of annual format and thinking about things in terms of years more than months. I noticed that happened.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because one of the things we recommend, I'd like to get your feedback, is, you know, you get to that 1 million and start scaling. Look at things on a rolling 3, 6, 12 month period, right? Because even things like gross dollar retention, you can have a little hiccup maybe for a month, maybe a couple of your larger paying customers actually for some reason churn, and it can look like a real blip. But if you normalize that over a rolling 6 to 12 months, it gives you an annualized view. Does that make sense to you, Nick?
Absolutely. I think thinking in terms of years or quarters and years, I think is how most people kind of get down to it. And, you know, things take time and you start thinking, you know, how do we get from here to there? And yeah, you might have a bad month. Like we had a bad month in July this year. And it's like, you know, no big deal. You kind of just, yeah, I guess you just think longer term and you kind of normalize things out and you don't let, you know, one large account, you know, losing one large account get to you and things like that.
So you mentioned funnel mechanics and funnel metrics. And as a founder CEO who scaled a company, you live these every day. Are there certain metrics within that funnel that you think are really important to understand? Is it top of funnel, leads converting into opportunities? Is it middle of the funnel? Anything specifically you recommend to look at?
I think you just need to understand each stage, right? And the stages might be different for each company because, you know, some companies, our funnel's been changed a bit recently for the first time because we are now acquiring a lot of leads that aren't free trials. So we used to have basically 99% of our leads were free trials. They'd come to the website. If they like what they saw, they'd sign up for a free trial. Then so it'd be like website visitor, free trial, activate in terms of onboard, basically onboarding. And that's where things get complicated, the whole onboarding, because that can be very simple or very complicated depending on what product domain you've chosen for your business. And I think Zendesk, where I used to work, had a very wonderful onboarding pathway. So I think that's a big part of their success, actually. And I think how easy and how hard and how sort of universal onboarding is, it's a big part of what dictates how fast a company grows and how successful a company is. But you know, the onboarding sort of activation part, and then there's going from that to buying, right, to paying and selecting a plan and paying, and then kind of retentions. But we recently added one additional thing, which is more, we found it's easier to scale our inbound lead flow from not trials, but by having things like webinars, white paper downloads, events, you know, scan badges at events, just more, maybe more traditional marketing strategies. And so our funnel now has a mix of like people that go straight to trial or people that, you know, we have something we released this year was called our 2022 SaaS benchmarks report. And we use the data from our entire customer base to basically give some insights off of real data about the state of SaaS growth and things like that and where things are going. But downloading that, you have to give your email address, and that was pretty popular. So we now have this mix. And so our funnel is kind of like, you know, how do we get them to then be interested in our product and maybe sign up for a free trial and get further along? So I don't think there's any specific part of the funnel. I think you just need to understand every step and understand what doesn't work well. What's the part where it's broken, right? Like each step has a percentage, right? Like what percentage of leads or what percentage of people go from that step to the next step, to the next step, to the next step. And if there's an obvious place where there's a huge fall off, that's, you know, what you need to try and fix, right? So for us, it's probably onboarding. It's quite binary for us. It's like either they're using Stripe or PayPal or Recurly or one of these products that we support out of the box, or they've built their subscription billing in-house, or using a system like NetSuite where we don't have an off-the-shelf integration, a turnkey integration. And then the onboarding is a lot more complicated. You need to maybe get a developer to write some kind of custom integration. And so that obviously like slows down the activation part and it becomes much more difficult. So we have this, we are the nature of our product and our business is we have quite a binary onboarding experience. It's either really, really smooth or, you know, a little bit, quite a bit of work for a developer. So, yeah.
I can't believe our 30 minutes are almost coming to an end. So I'm going to jump to the kind of the final topic I want to talk to you about. And I don't think there's anybody better to opine upon this. And that is, we have this mantra, said metrics informed, benchmark validated decision making. And it becomes the ethos of an organization. It's the culture, right? Instead of talking about being data-driven, they actually have a data-driven decision-making process. Are there any secrets or best practices to create that kind of ethos within a company? As a founder CEO of a subscription analytics company, how do you recommend a fellow founder CEO builds that kind of metrics-informed decision-making ethos?
Right. Well, I think the important thing is to have the analytics there, right? And it doesn't have to be, it could, you know, ours is revenue SaaS metrics, but it could also be something else like marketing metrics, which, or product usage metrics, which we, you know, we don't do. You got to have the stuff there and you got to select products that are easy to use and you got to invite the whole team to them. So there are products out there that are some traditional BI products that are just so complicated. They might be very powerful, but if you need to know SQL to use them, or you need to know how a data warehouse works, how to pivot and clean data and things like this, you're not going to have that kind of data-informed daily decision-making in your organization. It's not empowering your organization, your average employee, if they need to basically be an engineer to be able to use the product. So I think it's always, you know, better to select tooling in terms of the analytics where anyone can use it, you know, even if that means you sacrifice a little bit of flexibility. And that's really what Chartmogul does. It, you know, we think it's the most powerful, most flexible subscription analytics product out there. And it really is. But of course, if you build something custom yourself, you can theoretically get infinite flexibility because you're building it from scratch. But is that really worth it for having something that no one else can use except for the person that put it together, right? So I think having something easy to use that anyone can use, inviting your whole team to use it, that's the big part. That's the big first step. So that's something we've always tried to do. Obviously, we use our own product, but we also use other products. And when we're selecting other BI products, it's always about, okay, are we actually going to use this every day? Is everyone in the company going to be able to use this every day? I think that's super important. Yeah, and I think it's good to be cognizant that not every decision can be super data-driven or data-informed. There are certain areas where you can be really quantitative in your decision-making, but there are some where it's like, it's not as easy, and it's better to actually just talk to customers, be more qualitative, use more like your own gut feel and things like that. So I think it's always good to kind of know where that is. Like with our product team, when we have like four or five separate product teams, so the one that takes care of integrations, like main, you know, should we build this an integration with this product, or should we improve this integration or add this, that team can or more or less be 100% data driven, quantitative, because it's really about the numbers and the, you know, like how big is the market, like, you know, how many people are using it, how much revenue is going to be tracked through it. So it can be super specific on that. The UI team, you know, it's more about, you know, qualitative, you know, people say it's easier. They're getting stuck or they find it hard. So, I think it's also good to know when to follow the data and when to be like, actually just use your own feeling and your own common sense and your own gut feeling, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting because here I am, this you know, metrics nerd. And I was talking to a fellow CEO the other day, Nick Mehta from Gainsight. Okay. And he's like, you know, one of the ways to create that culture also is to have a strategy and a strategic vision. And then you're using the metrics to measure your progress towards achieving that vision, because right. People can emotionally buy into that vision. Often maybe it's that North Star metric, right? And then all the other operational metrics are just saying, hey, we're making progress towards our ultimate vision. But right. Nick, I want to give a chance to the listening audience to get to know you a little bit better on a personal basis through three rapid fire questions. Sure. And the first is there a CEO or company that every SaaS founder CEO should be following and listening to?
Sure. I mean, I want to choose someone who I tried to hire actually many years ago to be our CTO, and she said no and instead founded her own company, who's Mariam Hakobian. And mm-hmm. She's the founder of a company called Asofter. It's a really amazing, like, no code, basically app builder. You can build your own apps with her no code tool. And she's super driven SaaS founder, CEO based out of Berlin. And I have to give a disclosure because I'm an extremely tiny angel in her company. So, but she is absolutely fantastic, but I'm not a large angel or anything like this. So I think her, and then other companies, I mean, I'm a super big fan of Notion, but this is maybe like everybody's a big fan of Notion, but I just think it's like so well executed. It's really been transformative at our company in terms of knowledge sharing. And we're just using it more and more and more and more. I think when we were just getting started, Slack came out, and we actually started on Skype, and then we switched to Slack when that was getting popular. And then Notion almost felt like the missing piece for like making the company just sort of run smooth internally.
Can you just, for the listening audience who doesn't know what Notion is, what does Notion do?
I mean, I guess it would be like a next generation version of like an internal wiki. Like, I guess Confluence from Atlassian was something, maybe it's sort of a newer generation of something like internal knowledge sharing. So it's kind of going in more, and you know, you can do workflow and other things like that with it now. But yeah, it's like a whole knowledge base for the company, knowledge sharing, and you can use it for project management and things like that as well.
Very critical when you have a multinational distributed team, remote teams, right?
Right. I mean, we are very remote. I mean, we do have like three offices, but it's pretty optional to go to those, and people are spread out and working asynchronously. So getting into the habit of documenting everything, and my opinion about why Notion somehow won, is doing so well in this market, is that they kind of made it fun to write and publish content. Like, it's kind of enjoyable to, like, you add an emoji, you add some images. They kind of made it like, somehow it's sort of fun to create an article and then share it on Slack with your colleagues. Like, even if you're just writing a new policy for, you know, vacation policy or something, it's kind of fun to just write it up. The user experience of it is really nice. That's just, well, yeah, anyway, that's an impressive company. Yeah.
Making information sharing fun. Maybe they should apply that to CRM to make Salesforce automation fun for salespeople. But that's another topic too.
There are multiple companies out there trying to make Salesforce like a fun, basically a UI layer on top of Salesforce, right? Trying to make it fun and easy to use.
Right. Gamifying entering your call notes into Salesforce. Last question, Nick. We have a lot of early career, kind of aspirational people listen to the podcast, and they want to be the next great B2B cloud, B2B SaaS founder. What advice do you give to that early career, or even recent college graduate who wants to become the next Nick Franklin?
Well, I guess there are two common paths, right, to being a SaaS founder. You could come from any pathway, but there are two common paths. The first is that you work at a software company, a SaaS company for a while. I did 2 years or 1.5 years at a startup in the UK that became, it was acquired by Amazon. It became Amazon Alexa, sort of question answering thing. And then I left to work at Zendesk before the acquisition happened, everything. And I was at Zendesk about 5 years. I don't think I needed to spend 5 years. I think, you know, if I was optimizing more for becoming a founder quicker, I don't think, you know, 3 or 4 years would have easily been enough to get the experience, you know, the knowledge that you need, most likely. So I think that's one path. You learn a lot of things about, you know, how, you know, I think if you go straight from college to running a business, you might miss, you know, some of that learning about what does a successful company look like, right? Like, what departments do they have? What functions do they have? What skill sets do the people have? I think a lot of it is also about people, right? So getting a sense for like, well, what type of person really contributes a lot to the success of that business, right? And so that's all learnings that's pretty helpful. But there's a lot of founders that just go straight from college to starting their business. In fact, probably the most successful founders in tech, like the Facebook, Zuckerberg and Bill Gates and all these, and Steve Jobs, they all went straight to just starting the business. So, and that happens in SaaS. I think in SaaS, it feels to me like a lot of the solo sort of micro SaaS, digital nomad or bootstrapper SaaS founders, I think a lot of them just get straight into it. And that's totally awesome too. So these are the two paths you can take. And I think there's no right answer. I think it just depends on what you want to do, right? Like, you know, I think if you really want to be a founder, then maybe just, I would always say, just be a founder, right? Maybe skip the employment stage, but you know, there are pros and cons to that. And I think in terms of what prep you could do, definitely, you know, as a founder CEO, you basically have to be a good generalist, right? So I think learning the skill sets, or at least a shallow knowledge of, you know, or as deep as you can go on each of the various skill sets that go into making a SaaS company run, right? So, you know, if you don't know how to code, at least learn to code a bit, learn the basics, right? If you don't know how sales works, maybe learn, you know, it's good to learn about how sales works. That was one of the experiences I really got from Zendesk that I would have never done. It was just, I just kind of fell into that. I was never drawn into sales, but I just kind of fell into that and had to, and you know, just spent several years doing software sales and also hiring and training salespeople. So I think learning as many of the different disciplines, you know, be it marketing, finance, coding, design, whatever, is learn as many as you can. You're going to need to know a bit about all of it at some point. It will help you with doing it yourself and hiring, making the right hire if you want to hire functional heads for all those different departments later on.
I think that's great advice. Learn a little bit about the different functional roles and competencies, but you don't need to be an expert in it, right? You hire people who are better than you.
You always have to hire your better than you. But it's really useful if you can follow along and have your own, you know, have your own opinions. It really helps, especially when it comes to hiring and picking those people as well. If you kind of know what to look for.
Well, Nick, unfortunately, we've come to an end of this episode, but I wanted to thank you. This is Nick Franklin. He's the founder and CEO of ChartMogul, a leading subscription analytics platform, and it helps create that ethos of being metrics-informed decision-making. Nick, thank you for being a guest.
Thanks so much, Ray. Thanks for having me.
And to our listening audience, it would mean the world to us. If you're enjoying the conversations like we had with Nick today, go ahead and subscribe to the Metrics to Measure Up podcast from your favorite channel. Go ahead and give us that 5-star rating and provide a review or recommendation how we can make the show even better for you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's Metrics to Measure Up podcast. If you would like to learn more about B2B SaaS metrics and benchmarks, please visit RevOpsSquared.com.